Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording from downtown Nicosia. And with me in my virtual studio, I have Jane Hung, who is based in China, but is presently visiting Cyprus within the context of the 16 days against gender-based violence. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you very much for this invitation, Magda. I look forward to chatting with you.
I always look forward to chatting with inspiring women, but to put the listeners into the context, you are the founder of the Becky Buttons Initiative, which is an initiative that raises awareness about sexual harassment online and offline and advocates for prioritizing women's safety without commercialization. Tell me your story. Because gender-based violence is such a broad topic, and despite the fact that some of us choose to ignore it, it actually affects every single one of us in some way.
Exactly. And my story is I hadn't realized how endemic gender-based violence was around the world until I lost my 30-year-old daughter to rape and murder in Lebanon in 2017. And that has taken my life on a completely different trajectory. I discovered that in that year alone, 85,000 women somewhere were killed by a man. And since then, I've realized that femicide, killing of a woman by a man, is just a small proportion of gender-based violence. You know, there's domestic violence, there's violence everywhere. But it's become my vision through telling my story as a bereaved mother that we want to build a world free from gender-based violence where everyone feels safe, valued, and equal.
And I think, to not detract from your daughter's story, but I think with all the facts that are coming out about the Jeffrey Epstein story, I think it is way worse than what we actually thought it was, because firstly, it's covered up by patriarchy. They meant them to cover it up. And secondly, it's affecting a younger woman, more younger than what we thought. It's being made to be okay by a lot of people. And the trauma of it is not put into the equation, because I think that's, besides the trauma and what actually happened, which is beyond measure, what the ripple effect on society is immeasurable. And it also costs money, which is something men understand better than gender equality and women wanting to feel safe. Tell me a little bit about your daughter, because you created this initiative in her honor, as a legacy to her.
I did. She worked at the British Embassy in Beirut as a manager, and she was managing projects for disadvantaged Lebanese and refugees. She loved her job. She'd been there less than a year, actually. And after a long day at work, and shortly before Christmas, she got a taxi home and didn't get out of it. It's extremely rare in Lebanon for this to happen. The news went worldwide. She was, this is, you know, trigger warning. It all happened very fast, but she was found with a rope around her neck. And the driver was found very quickly and is now serving a life sentence without parole in Rumieh prison in Beirut.
And how did you find out?
Oh, it's like what you see in movies. You know, the phone rang a little bit earlier than usual. And it was someone from London, actually, from DFID, which is the organisation where my daughter worked. DFID has now been linked to the Foreign Office, FCDO. And he said, I'm afraid your daughter seems to have gone missing.
The usual British stiff upper lip of trying to couch it in something softer. Maybe it was a way of smoothing you in or making it gentle on you.
I'm British. I've lived in Hong Kong 40 years, but I was brought up in Britain, and I am a typical British person, let's say. When I look back, I looked on it almost as a cold call. And I said, okay, well, please update me. But within very quickly, 1 hour, it was discovered that the unnamed body in a mortuary was actually my daughter. And she was
Rebecca,
found,
your daughter Rebecca.
Rebecca Dykes. She was called Rebecca Dykes. And it took 24 hours to identify what happened. But then events moved very fast in terms of finding the driver and taking him into custody.
Okay, and how quickly did you make it to Beirut?
I didn't rush to Beirut. The father of Rebecca did go. I chose to stay back in Hong Kong, which actually was a good idea because there was suddenly a lot of legal work that needed to be done. It was complicated that it had happened in Lebanon, but she was British, I was British. The father was in Hong Kong, and me too. So there were a lot of documents and legalities that needed to be done. And also, alas, there were a lot of photos that suddenly went on the website, and we had to take out a number of injunctions to stop those photos going viral. So, Magda, in summary, it's nearly 8 years ago. It's terrible. I never realized the impact that the killing of a woman has on the family. I since then, gradually, but now very seriously, I devote my life to raising awareness, telling people simply what happened, and then moving on, turning darkness to light. Because, as I say, there are many, many women, and what can I do? What can my charity do to build awareness? It's about education. It's about empowering women.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I also think you probably inadvertently or subconsciously were trying to do right by Becky.
Oh
You,
yes,
and
I.
Becky, I don't think it, I don't think your daughter, if she was a good daughter like you say she was, I don't think she would have wanted you to wallow and sink into despair. I think she would have wanted you to be make something good out of it.
That's what I'm trying to do, and I'm building her legacy so that her death isn't in vain.
So tell me about the Becky Buttons.
Okay. Well, I started about 4 years ago. I have a button. I've got it in my hands, but this, basically, I had an idea very early on. If only she'd been wearing some panic button, which would have she could press very high decibel sound, which would have shocked the attacker and given her a few vital seconds to get out of the car, basically. I believe it would have saved her life. Of course, there are many, many different scenarios of how women lose their life. But it's very small. The one press, it emits 125 decibel sound, which is as loud as you can go, really, without damaging ears. And that will ring for an hour and a half unless it's depressed. It's pressed again for 2 or 3 seconds and then it goes off. It's designed as a wearable. You can clip it on some part of your body, or you could put it around your neck, on a necklace. It's very light, it's rechargeable, it's recyclable plastic.
And how long does the battery last? Because I think a lot of us, it's like a mobile telephone, you sometimes forget to recharge it and you don't have your power bank with you.
Well, the manufacturer says it'll last forever, but I'm looking for a device that is even more reliable, and we're working on that at the moment, actually, in collaboration with the University of Cambridge. But this present model, sorry, what did you say? You
How
have to
long
edit
does it
this bit.
last? How,
Oh,
no, that's
yes.
okay. It's
Yeah,
okay. This
the
is a
battery.
conversation. You're not
Yeah,
in an
very good.
exam. This is a conversation.
Yeah, the battery. So what we offer simple training to all the people that we give this Becky's button to, and part of the charity is giving it for free to the most disadvantaged. And we're telling them, please just recharge it every 2 months. And we also provide a simple charger. It's a micro USB, just to be absolutely sure that when it's pressed, it will work.
And where how did you get yourself organized? Because this is not something sure you did alone. You needed a tribe to do it, as everything does.
I have a tribe. It's growing and growing, which is I'm very grateful for that. But I live in Hong Kong. Just over the border is Shenzhen, a place where the product I had in my mind could be designed and manufactured, and it was. I trialed it in Greece, for refugees, actually,
Okay.
who lived in a camp called Mavrovoni camp. There was a lot of news about it about 5 years ago, those ghastly ones of children being washed up on beaches,
Yes,
those, you know,
yes.
that time. And so we trialed it there. The refugees were living in tents, and within a month we had a report that it had averted a gang rape. Some refugee got walking at night time to go to the toilet, which was about, you know, a minute away, and being accosted by four men. She pressed the button. The security heard it. They went out to see what it was, an unusual sound, and it was reported.
Okay. Lucky for her that she was wearing it. So you trialed it in Greece, and then where, how did you distribute it beyond that? And I think the main question that I would like to know is how is this funded? Because this costs money. As charitable and as focused and as motivated we need to be, want to be, or are, it needs money.
It does. I've lived in Hong Kong for 40 years. Hong Kong has been very good to me financially. I mean, not wonderful, but good enough, let's say. I have a simple life. I was a writer of children's books before this happened. There was some money, obviously, from her death, you know, the
The
insurance,
compensation.
etc. Insurance. And so I didn't want to waste time. I just wanted to pay, you know, for whatever. So here we are 7 years later. I say I, but now I should say my charity, because I started sort of by myself, yes, and built people who shared my vision, basically. I manufactured 7,500. They went to Greece, then they went to Lebanon, they went to Pakistan, some went to Jordan. But then my efforts, let's say, were recognized by King Charles in the UK. And last December, I received an Elizabeth emblem at Windsor Castle. Now, actually, that award is given to family members who've lost someone in service, because, you know, Becky was a civil servant of the
Yeah.
UK. And so after that, I got some significant media opportunities, let's say, and I had over 300 inquiries. You know, well, how can we get the button? How can we help? We work organizations such as for women in shelters, trafficked women, sex workers, food bank recipients. These kind of organizations reached out and said, can you just give us some, please? We'd know exactly who would really benefit from these panic alarms. So I'd never realized how useful this device could be in the UK.
Or you also didn't realize how widespread the problem of marginalized women that were vulnerable, or women that were vulnerable.
This has just opened my eyes to so many things. But in answer to your question, it made sense to register a charity in the UK, which we did in March. And of course, now I have a registered charity, then we can accept donations.
Okay. And I think we all at this Not only us woke people, but we all recognize that, and it's not only the marginalized women that are vulnerable, we are all vulnerable. Or yet the older are vulnerable. I'm finding that I've always been a brave, bold person, but now that I'm getting a bit older, I walk into situations. It's the first time in my life. I used to live in apartheid South Africa, and there I was never felt safe, that the doors of my car were always locked. Now living in Cyprus 25 years, in the last few months, I'm suddenly locking my car doors. So vulnerability is not only limited to vulnerable women or the ones that are perceived as vulnerable. We are all potential victims, unfortunately.
Magda, it's the tragedy seems to be that the numbers are just going off, and we are living in an increasingly vulnerable world. And yes, we are all vulnerable. And I have been working with organizations that are servicing vulnerable adults, let's say. But for me individually, and this is what I want to talk about in Cyprus. It's been such a journey, but increasingly I'm really focusing on Becky's Button, building safer communities for young people. We want to empower young people to
I agree.
actually make their own environment safe, start at the beginning, where they go to school, and then what's happening in their families, and then what's happening in their community. So I particularly like working with students, 16 plus, let's say. And we have been very busy this year building projects for young people to disseminate in their organizations. And when I come to Cyprus, I've been working with Lauren McAllister, who I guess you know, the
Absolutely.
Agenda Affairs Officer of UNFICYP. And she has given me a wonderful platform to actually share what we are doing for young people to empower them and also to encourage them to spread the word about how they can build safer communities.
I think that's great because I think we do need to remember that the young people are actually living in this world. We're not creating a world for them. So they need to be part of the conversation and they need to be a strong part of the conversation, creating the or distributing the right information or having the right information to distribute and having the tools to empower firstly themselves and the community around them.
Yes, it gives me energy. It gives me a passion to help them because they are particularly vulnerable and they are particularly open to doing something and also working voluntarily and working on social media. And here's the pertinent point from, I mean, I've been around the Middle East, and I say we are a global initiative. We want as many people to know about what happened to Becky and the importance of wearing panic buttons as a safeguard. But talking to we like workshops where we are encouraging young women and young men to speak. And it came the last couple of years, we are hearing everywhere that online sexual harassment, online sexual violence is endemic and really harming and disturbing young people. So again, that is an area that I'm very happy to go into in terms of empowering people, giving them information, giving them education, help, putting ideas in their mind about how they can, for women, how they can be more aware of the dangers, let's say, the potential dangers, alas, without triggering them. And then to young men, to encourage them to be, to be good men, to take care of their girlfriends or their mothers, their any women that are in their life that they care for.
But
What
it's also, sorry, it's also important to speak to them, to listen to what they have to say, because sometimes we have ideas coming from a different context because we're not a digital age peeps. So sometimes also good because they can have really great ideas of how to protect themselves, having been victims or having known victims or targets of gender-based violence or digital violence. They can also contribute to the conversation and make it a totally better tool or
Yes.
methodology.
Yes. Now, in terms of Cyprus, I'd like to tell you a little bit about why I'm coming to Cyprus. And I have to be very humble because I'm not from Cyprus, and there's a lot I have to learn about Cyprus. But
I hate to break the news to you, but gender-based violence does not have an ethnicity. So it doesn't matter if you're not from here. Everyone's willing to listen to you, and I think everyone's willing to have an interactive conversation.
that's what I found too. And in Cyprus, there's a particularly complex socio-political context. I can see that. But the latest reports that have come out show that sexual violence is increasing, and also that this intercommunal aspect, whoever you are, whichever tribe, we want to be totally open and non-discriminative in the message we say, and it's a simple message. And I hope that it resonates in Cyprus. Lauren has organized a number of events. We are going to, well, the open event. How did you hear about it? The one on the 1st of December.
Well, it's online, and Lauren actually called me and told me, I hope you're going to be, because I've been doing a lot of traveling. She says, I hope you're going to be in town because 1st of December, we're having the first event with Jane.
Right. So it's early days of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence organized by the UN, and a number of countries are creating more and more events related to this. So in Cyprus, that open meeting, and I really hope you tell your friends, and this podcast will actually make more people come. I will be sharing my simple story, but then also there will be the Mediterranean Institute of Gender Studies there, and the Association of Women to Support Living in CIAD, and the UNHCR, refugees. And together we will discuss the challenges and sort of brainstorm about what could be done to improve the situation in Cyprus. And this has the support. I mean, I've got fantastic support, not only from the from Lauren, but also from the British High Commission and CIAD, the UN Refugee Agency, UNICEF. A number of organizations will come together. We have a workshop that it will be a closed session. That will be the following day on the 2nd of December. And then we will be talking at a university, actually, to young women and young men. And then
In the north or the south at the
yeah,
University of
in the
Cyprus?
north, in the north. And the migrants and third country nationals, refugees and asylum seekers have been invited. But it's going to be very informal. We want a discussion. And then the more formal one event will be on the 3rd of December, and that will be an internal town hall event organized by UNFICYP, and there will be staff from the UN Development Programme, the UN, and then military, police, and civilian staff. So the idea is to have a symposium to acknowledge that it is an issue in Cyprus, as it is in many parts of the world, and then
Well,
to
the important part of gender-based violence is that it's something that we share for both communities. It's not something that's in one and not in the other. So it's unifying in a most surreal kind of way, but it's something that is common. Gender-based violence doesn't prefer an ethnicity or not. It's universal. So it's something that unifies, and it's something. As a bi-communal activist, I've always said we've got to look for things that we have in common.
I
And
totally agree.
one of them is gender-based violence.
And in many, and sometimes I think, I mean, compared to the other existential problems going on in the world, gender-based violence, could it be a relatively easier fix than climate change or, AI, capitalism?
I'm not really sure because it's gender-based violence has also got to do with changing a mindset. Because it's
Yes.
also teaching communities and that it's not cool to hurt other people, and other people are not your property. And everyone has an equal value. We all have the equal value. And it isn't better or worse, or I'm better or worse than you. It's I have the equal right to feel safe, to have a dignified lifestyle. So I
Yes.
think it's a lot of way at some, and I think I'm going to go back again to the Epstein files. When you look at that scandal, you realize that it's a lot more subliminal and it's got a lot more dimensions that we can't see. That I'm
Exactly.
wondering if it is easier. It's definitely one that's a priority because people are getting hurt and it's not, it's usually a partner or someone you're familiar with, but it's not only.
Yes, alas, it's so true. I agree. And you've mentioned already the key word. It begins with P, patriarchy, and another one is misogyny. All right, misogyny, which the definition is a dislike of, or contempt for women, and an ingrained prejudice. That's the thing. It can be very subtle. But certainly in the Middle East, this is a concept which is relatively new. And I like to think that we're soft selling this idea. We are challenging misogyny. So any kind of threatening behavior or any unwanted sexual advances, it's not acceptable. And it has changed in the UK and the US, developed countries. I'm not saying that the violence has gone down, but the laws changed, the enforcement has improved. In Middle East, I think there are opportunities for that to be improved. But just to build that concept and how I attract these young people is to tell them that when I was a teenager, walking back from school, it was quite normal for, my bottom to be pinched or,
For you to
flies
be
down and
catcalled.
a cat call whistled. And I thought, well, that's what men do. That's men. I didn't tell my parents, I didn't. Yeah, it was ignorance. There's no education. So when I tell that story, then a lot of women are sort of nodding and saying, yes, we understand now. It's not good. It's not right. And how can it be improved? And one very interesting thing I'd like to share, actually, because we've been very busy in the last 4 months doing what we called a Rebecca Dykes Change Maker Challenge. And the challenger has been to challenge misogyny. So we're saying we want youth-led action in Lebanon to combat GBV. And one comment that came up very quickly, because we wanted our information to be bilingual, of course,
Yeah, of course.
the Arabic speakers were saying, well, what's the word for misogyny in Arabic? And then one of the students sort of said, oh, I'm going to go to the language department and talk to a professor, because it's not a recognized concept. But it is now for some people that joined the RDCC. We got a phenomenal response. We got a lot of registrations. So these were young people from secondary schools and universities. And we offer a small cash prize and the opportunity to go to the British Embassy to get certificates from the British ambassador at his residence. And they had quite a complex process to actually go through over a period of months. But we got 98 registrations,
Wow.
and we want to do something very similar next year. We want to roll it out to more places in Lebanon. We started with a collaboration with the American University of Beirut, actually, and then they had a lot of students from, interestingly, a real range of cultural backgrounds, let's say, because a lot of those students there are on scholarships. So that was interesting. And
I
then
think you'd
we.
see a lot of that range of students at universities in the north because they've got a lot of foreign students and a lot of them are targets for gender-based violence.
Very good, Magda. Well, we are looking for community-based action and intercommunal Yeah, forget who you are and what your background is. What are you going to do in your life, in your family? And that will be the message that I try, well, I will give, and I will be humbly, listening and learning, because Cyprus is a new country for me.
As I said, it's a new country, but the concept is as old as the earth itself. Misogyny has always been alive and well and doing its damage. Because I think when you actually get down to it, you think of how much it affects confidence. And as you said, it doesn't just affect the person, it affects the family. It's a ripple effect. It affects the workplace. It affects everything. So I think you cannot raise enough awareness about gender-based violence because it really is an epidemic. Really
So
is an epidemic.
how do you think my story and will be taken in Cyprus based on what I've told you?
Well, I think it'll be taken well. And to be honest, I'm a storyteller. Okay, I love stories, and I think when you try and start something, if it starts off with a personal story, which means you have a personal investment, it's always received much more positively, much more embracingly, because you're not coming here to start an initiative or to run a business or to open a NGO. You're coming here because you have a personal trauma or a personal wound that you are
Yes.
trying to, as you said, you through your darkness, you're trying to shine the light. And I think people receive that very, very warmly when it comes from when an initiative or a conversation comes from somewhere deep in your heart.
I hope so. And I certainly have a story to tell. I've written my memoir, actually. It's been published in Arabic in Lebanon. It's not available in English yet for a variety of personal reasons. But there are many stories there about the outcome of losing a child in such a violent way.
Can I ask you a question? How do you feel about, do you feel vindicated that he actually went to jail with no parole? Does it make the pain less?
Oh, Magda. For me, maybe because I'm a mother, maybe because I'm a compassionate person, I felt sorry for the killer's mother and his sister. Of course, I didn't jump to that immediately, but my natural instinct as a writer was to go to books to read about the history of violence, why people are violent, the prison system, criminal justice system. I turned to all that, and ultimately, when you're talking about another human being killing an innocent other, surely it's particularly difficult to accept. But what I need and what he probably needs is to be forgiven by me, and to be forgiven by for his family to forgive him. I do believe in redemption. I think as human beings, right, that's what we want. We're not animals. All right, okay, he acted in a particularly animalistic
Fashion.
fashion that night, but he was 29 years old. He'd been in and out of prison. He had very little education. He didn't know who his father was. I mean, I have done some research. I wanted to know the facts as the mother, and I just now we're moving more into sort of spiritual belief. I thought that I believe that it's just a tragedy all round.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head, and that's gender-based violence. It's not just the victim that's affected or her family, it's also the perpetrator. Because I agree with you, I wouldn't like to be in her shoes either, his mother's. She must have so much guilt. I don't know what she's got, but that family, it's two families that have been destroyed, not just one.
Exactly. Well, that's how I see it. And I don't want to point fingers. I just want to appeal to the goodness of human beings, basically. Call me a little naive, but I'm sorry, we're not animals. We have a conscience. I mean, unless he was sort of delinquent or you know, on some completely out of his mind with drink or drugs. It doesn't excuse it at all, but you know what I mean?
Yes, no.
Ultimately,
I agree with you. It's we're not animals, and he's in jail. Unfortunately, your daughter's not coming back. But throwing guilt, more guilt at him, and not throwing a bit of compassion to the tribe that surrounds him, his family, is not going to make you feel any better. Whereas if you find a little bit of compassion, not compassion, peace, by actually understanding that his family is also in pain, I think it makes it easier for you as well, on your soul, on your psyche.
I believe it does. I know I'm fairly unusual. I read the stories of many bereaved parents and all this thing about justice. You know, oh, he's locked away. Never let him out. Throw away the keys. Ideally, we should chop off his head, whatever. How's that going to improve the situation on the planet?
It's not going to bring your daughter back. It's
It's
not.
not going to, no, it's not going to bring my daughter back. And it doesn't give the perpetrator a chance to express his remorse and ideally to re-educate himself and to spread the word, ideally, about how destructive it can be. The Lebanese legal system is particularly harsh. I mean, he has a death sentence, but there's been no carrying out of that since 2008. It's very political, but he's living on death row. And in terms of the Lebanese system, that means even if he's not put to
Execute.
death, but yeah, that he will be in prison for life. There's no chance of parole.
And
So
he was only
it's
29 years old when he went in. So it's
yes.
a hell of a long time he's going to be spending in a really closely closed up.
How's that going to spread the word, spread the story about
And
this
how
tragedy? If he's, yeah.
is that affecting his family? His pay, someone needs to visit him. Anyway, I agree with you. I think even though it sounds unreasonable or strange, I think we need to understand that when there is a loss, when you lose someone, someone did that, which means their family has also lost something and also lives through the repercussion. The ripple effect is also to his family or their family.
Are you a mother? I like to think that if women like us continue to be advocates, spoke out, did what we could to raise awareness, that as the members of the female sex, we could do something to touch people's hearts, to tell people that it's just not acceptable. And I
And
think
I'm the mother of a son.
how do
I
you
have
teach him how to behave?
all these certain things that are not acceptable. He went through a stage with a lot of anger and bashing doors, and I said to him, "You know what? Not acceptable. I divorced your dad because he was like that, so you either do something about it." And he actually came to me about a few months later and asked to go for anger management. Which was, I said to him, "Well, you know what? You've won half the battle, the fact that you recognize that there's a problem." And it was just a phase he was going through, but he dealt with it. And I called him out.
There are patterns in families, are there not? And so there you are. He found a way, he acknowledged it. And that's a big step for
It is a big
many
step.
young men. And as a mother, you must feel very relieved about that.
Now, the minute he asked me, I was so relieved because I said to him, "You know what, dude, the fact that you actually have come to ask me for help is half the battle. It means you know something's wrong and you want to deal with it. So I said to him, that's half the success. You're almost there.
So if only more males had loving, caring mothers who really noted, what was going on and kept that loving relationship. Because it seems to me that the core problem of why people become violent is because of dysfunctional upbringings and bad relations with their mothers.
Is it simple as that? It's, I
What do
suppose
you
so.
think?
I mean, I do. I think as a parent, you have responsibility, but kids are at school, and school can be, depending on how confident or not the child is, they can be exposed to peer pressure. They can be. There was a problem with drugs at my son's school. People were selling, and I'd sit. To my son, you know what? They look for kids. We had this conversation. I said, they look for kids who need to make a living. And if they see you, I said to him, you've got a serious, the child of a single mom, they can assume you need money. So just be aware because they can approach you. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's also having a parent that's got their eyes on possibilities or being present, but not overbearing. So you actually see things that could affect. But I do think. Children do bring a certain amount of behavior with them. So maybe there again, it's what you nurture in your child.
We are the nurturers. Let's see.
Anyway, I don't think we can have enough conversations about this, and I think we all bear responsibility and we all have a role to play.
Wouldn't it be lovely that more people did join this bandwagon? I'm active on social media, mainly because we're really focusing on young people, but that young people are future adults, and
Are you active
we,
on Instagram,
yes,
TikTok?
please have a look. Not TikTok, actually, just Instagram.
What's a Becky's button?
Becky's button, one word, yes.
Okay.
And we
Those
update
listening,
regularly
make
there.
a follow Becky's button to support the cause and to see ways that you can support, that you can do something real to
Yes,
support.
just follow us. Just follow us, and any, of course, any comments or anything else, a volunteer, anything we can do. We want to build a movement. We want to build community,
And you
and
have a website that's, tell me
yes,
your
we do.
website.
It's just Becky's Button,
Dot com.
dot org, because
Dot
we're a
B, you
charity.
know, BECKYSBUT
BUTTON dot
dot
org.
org.
Yes,
Okay.
maybe, yeah. And then I should say that there's a lot of information at the moment about the Rebecca Dykes Changemaker Challenge that I've told you about. But coming up in the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot about what we're doing, a leading safety initiative with scout leaders in Lebanon. Because what happened, a lot of the students who joined the Changemaker Challenge said, we want to do something now. And of course, advocacy is one thing, but community-based action is another. So with these young people getting together and saying, hey, we really enjoyed that, we want to do more, we found one student who volunteers as a student volunteer, a scout volunteer. So we're creating a toolkit, and we're having a workshop on the 6th of December for 50 to 80 scout leaders who in
In
turn have
Lebanon.
their, yeah, in Lebanon, in Beirut. So this is the kind of action we want from grassroots, from the ground up, young people. That's our target. So anyone who's listening in Cyprus who thinks, oh, maybe that could work in Cyprus, please let us know.
Well, I'm glad one of your conversations is going to be at a university because that's where you should be. It's one of the places where people are still, they're passionate, they have their causes, they also targets of gender-based violence because the universities are, all universities are challenging a lot of the time for young women.
Yes, and there are a lot of safeguarding techniques, let's say, that I've found out in the UK that are not happening in, let's say, Lebanon. That's the country I know best. So it's, again, it's education. actually, you know, and now you're talking about the professors and the management, but oh, you know, have you thought about doing this? Have you thought about doing that? And the students that actually participated in our challenge, they were giving ideas about what they could, you know, what could be done. And the really the thing that gives me joy, it's hard to give me joy, but this gives me joy. You know, students are sort of saying, oh, I talked to my my supervisor, or I, you know, I talked to my headmaster, and he said, oh, you know, yes, we could implement what your idea. And their ideas are, you know, quite simple, you know, sort of messaging and notice boards, anonymous messages, education, little toolkit, and of course Becky's button, the education around Becky's button. So it's keeping me very busy, but my life is very meaningful.
No, I agree with you. When you're doing something with a cause and your heart is in it, it takes on another level of meaning. And I'm encouraging everyone to come to your workshop on the 1st of December at 5 o'clock at Luther Palace. I'll be there, so I'll see you there. I'll meet you face to face. And look forward to seeing how I can help going forward.
Magda, it's been fantastic talking to you. And yes, please tell your friends. I mean, it's very informal. You don't have to know anything really, except gender-based violence is everywhere, and the numbers are going up in Cyprus. And what can we do about it as human beings?
In fact, you need to just know the word gender-based violence and come and learn, because sometimes you don't know enough. So just come and listen, even if it's, that
Exactly.
could be the first step. That could be the
Let's
first step.
see.
So
I do hope so. Yeah.
Jane, thank you very much for speaking with me today. Always interested to promote this cause because, as I said, we can't talk about it enough because it's endemic and we don't realize how far-reaching the ripples are. So any little pebble each of us can put into trying to combat it is priceless.
I love that. We're all pebbles and we
We're all
can
little
build
pebbles.
ripples. We're little
Exactly.
pebbles. Let's build a beautiful beach.
Yeah.
Yes,
And
very
have
nice.
a
Thank you.
lovely stay, a lovely productive stay in Cyprus, and see you soon. And
You
to the
will.
listener, and to the listeners, be at the workshop or follow Jane either on her website for updates or on Instagram, Becky's Button. Thank you, Jane, and
Thank
have a
you,
lovely rest
Magda.
of the day.
Thank you so much, and you. Bye bye.
Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.